Section 1. Listening. This section of the test has three parts. You will hear three recordings, which you will listen to twice. While listening, answer the questions in the appropriate part of the test. Follow the instructions. When answering questions in the first and second part, use the answer sheet labelled with a cross. When answering questions in the third part, use the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Now prepare the answer sheet labelled with a cross. Part 1. You will hear an interview with Kathy Hall, who is a director of the Walker Arts Centre in Minneapolis, Minnesota. For the following statements, 1 to 7, choose the correct answer A, B, C or D. There is always only one correct answer. Mark your answers on the answer sheet labelled with a cross. Now you have 2 minutes to read the tasks. Now listen to part 1.
What do you, as its director, see as the most significant development or trend at the Walker Arts Center?
When I became a museum director in 1991, one of the first things I did was to try to find my way and better understand other institutions' missions. While those missions included serious research, resulting in the development of original exhibitions and important additions to their permanent collections, very few, if any, mentioned those we are serving. In other words, very few included the word people in their mission statements. As for our institution, there has been a shift to the practitioner, the artist, and even more to the diversity of the audience we serve. So for me, the major development over the last decade has been placing people at the center of our mission.
What particularly have you come up with recently?
The Walker, and we're not alone in this, has opened our thinking and doors to previously underestimated audiences, particularly teenagers. I thought, as a director, that it was important to make teenagers part of the pleasures and rewards of cultural institutions. Teenagers do precisely what artists do. They rock the boat. They ask questions outside the box. They doubt conventional values.
Have you seen creative or artistic influences from overseas over the last 10 years?
Absolutely. Our mission at the Walker, which is unique, is described by these adjectives: multidisciplinary, diverse, and global. Multidisciplinary means that we shelter not only the visual arts, but also the performing arts, film, video, and new media. Diverse is reflected in everything that is shown in the screening room, on the stage, and in the galleries. And global expresses the fact that not only do we include cultures from around the world, but also that we reflect new ways of thinking about older cultures. For example, The Walker currently has a year-long educational artistic program in progress, Art in a Global Age. This program involves exhibitions, the performing arts, and programs online.
What is the greatest challenge you see today?
Economic instability. It has an enormous impact on our liberty to make choices. I have told my board that whatever choices we make in this economic climate, we must make them with an eye towards preserving freedom, the freedom to innovate, or the freedom to create new models of understanding.
How do you think the field of art will change over the next 10 years, creatively speaking?
10 years from now, I believe, there will be new art forms for which we don't yet have names. They will bring together moving pictures, moving performers, and the digital universe. Our institutions tend to break the disciplines into departments. For example, you have a photography department, a painting and sculpture department, a drawing department, and maybe a film department. Today, artists are erasing those boundaries.
Now listen again.
What do you, as its director, see as the most significant development or trend at the Walker Art Center?
When I became a museum director in 1991, one of the first things I did was to try to find my way and better understand other institutions' missions. While those missions included serious research, resulting in the development of original exhibitions and important additions to their permanent collections, very few, if any, mentioned those we are serving. In other words, very few included the word people in their mission statements. As for our institution, there has been a shift to the practitioner, the artist, and even more to the diversity of the audience we serve. So for me, the major development over the last decade has been placing people at the center of our mission.
What particularly have you come up with recently?
The Walker, and we're not alone in this, has opened our thinking and doors to previously underestimated audiences, particularly teenagers. I thought, as a director, that it was important to make teenagers part of the pleasures and rewards of cultural institutions. Teenagers do precisely what artists do. They rock the boat. They ask questions outside the box. They doubt conventional values.
Have you seen creative or artistic influences from overseas over the last 10 years?
Absolutely. Our mission at the Walker, which is unique, is described by these adjectives: multidisciplinary, diverse, and global. Multidisciplinary means that we shelter not only the visual arts, but also the performing arts, film, video, and new media. Diverse is reflected in everything that is shown in the screening room, on the stage, and in the galleries. And global expresses the fact that not only do we include cultures from around the world, but also that we reflect new ways of thinking about older cultures. For example, The Walker currently has a year-long educational artistic program in progress, Art in a Global Age. This program involves exhibitions, the performing arts, and programs online.
What is the greatest challenge you see today?
Economic instability. It has an enormous impact on our liberty to make choices. I have told my board that whatever choices we make in this economic climate, we must make them with an eye towards preserving freedom, the freedom to innovate, or the freedom to create new models of understanding.
How do you think the field of art will change over the next 10 years, creatively speaking?
10 years from now, I believe, there will be new art forms for which we don't yet have names. They will bring together moving pictures, moving performers, and the digital universe. Our institutions tend to break the disciplines into departments. For example, you have a photography department, a painting and sculpture department, a drawing department, and maybe a film department. Today, artists are erasing those boundaries.
Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks. Part 2. Listen to the true story of an American athlete in Great Britain. For questions 8 to 13, decide whether the statements are true, A, false, B, or whether the information was not given, C. Mark your answers on the answer sheet labelled with a cross. Now you have 2 minutes to read the tasks. Now listen to part 2.
You will hear the true story of an American athlete, Michelle Sykes, who is studying at Oxford.
For more than 40 years, British track and field athletes would gladly have swum the Atlantic to gain an American college scholarship. By contrast, no one could pretend that Oxford has outstanding sports facilities within Britain. Loughborough and Bath are just two universities that have made top sport a cornerstone of their profiles. So it's a major surprise in this strictly professional era to find a top female US athlete crossing the ocean and accepting a scholarship at Lincoln College in Oxford. Michelle Sykes made the US team for the 2007 World Athletics Championships in Osaka, running the 5,000 metres. She was 22. Young for an endurance athlete, and had emerged from Wake Forest University in North Carolina, a small liberal arts college with a serious sports program. Michelle comments about her decision to study at Oxford and laughs. Yes, it's a challenge here in Oxford. There's no five-person coaching team arranging travel, and the resources are far fewer. She insists that running is less affected by Oxford's relative lack of facilities than most other sports would be. For her, Oxford is a unique opportunity and an inspiring environment. Everyone is so passionate about whatever they do, whether it's an academic, sporting or cultural field, and it's all pursued to excellence. Michelle points out that this is a difference from many US universities. Michelle remains serious about heading for this year's World Championships. She runs 65 miles every week and admits that she has been very lucky to find a serious training partner and a highly respected coach. Michelle said, "It would be very hard to train like this on my own, but I met Jonathan Blackledge here, who is a Great Britain junior in cross-country running, and a friend of mine recommended me to his coach, Bruce Tullow. Tullow, now in his 70s, is a former European champion over 5,000 metres and particularly knowledgeable about altitude training. Sykes, Blackledge and two other Oxford runners went to Arizona to train at 7,000 feet. Tullow says it's a pleasure to help someone really top class again. Michelle's been well trained and she's got strength. She showed that in the National Cross Country Championships. It was really muddy and hilly, neither of which she likes or is used to, so to come sixth was a big performance. In fact, just matching her personal best would get her inside the international standard time for inclusion in the 2009 World Championships. That goal will depend on getting some high-class races this summer, and here Oxford might help. It's a convenient base for the big European summer athletics circuit. And there's another way how Oxford can combine her two passions, for running and for her subject, economic and social history. In a couple of weeks, Michelle will travel to Kenya to carry out research into the history and social context of athletics in Kenya. Now listen again.
You will hear the true story of an American athlete, Michelle Sykes, who is studying at Oxford.
For more than 40 years, British track and field athletes would gladly have swum the Atlantic to gain an American college scholarship. By contrast, no one could pretend that Oxford has outstanding sports facilities within Britain. Loughborough and Bath are just two universities that have made top sport a cornerstone of their profiles. So it's a major surprise in this strictly professional era to find a top female US athlete crossing the ocean and accepting a scholarship at Lincoln College in Oxford. Michelle Sykes made the US team for the 2007 World Athletics Championships in Osaka, running the 5,000 metres. She was 22, young for an endurance athlete, and had emerged from Wake Forest University in North Carolina, a small liberal arts college with a serious sports programme. Michelle comments about her decision to study at Oxford and laughs. Yes, it's a challenge here in Oxford. There's no five-person coaching team arranging travel and the resources are far fewer. She insists that running is less affected by Oxford's relative lack of facilities than most other sports would be. For her, Oxford is a unique opportunity and an inspiring environment. Everyone is so passionate about whatever they do, whether it's an academic, sporting or cultural field, and it's all pursued to excellence. Michelle points out that this is a difference from many US universities. Michelle remains serious about heading for this year's World Championships. She runs 65 miles every week and admits that she has been very lucky to find a serious training partner and a highly respected coach. Michelle said, "It would be very hard to train like this on my own, but I met Jonathan Blackledge here, who is a Great Britain junior in cross-country running, and a friend of mine recommended me to his coach, Bruce Tullow." Tullow, now in his 70s, is a former European champion over 5,000 metres and particularly knowledgeable about altitude training. Sykes, Blackledge and two other Oxford runners went to Arizona to train at 7,000 feet. Tullow says it's a pleasure to help someone really top class again. Michelle's been well trained and she's got strength. She showed that in the National Cross Country Championships. It was really muddy and hilly, neither of which she likes or is used to, so to come sixth was a big performance. In fact, just matching her personal best would get her inside the international standard time for inclusion in the 2009 World Championships. That goal will depend on getting some high-class races this summer, and here Oxford might help. It's a convenient base for the big European summer athletics circuit. And there's another way how Oxford can combine her two passions, for running and for her subject, economic and social history. In a couple of weeks, Michelle will travel to Kenya to carry out research into the history and social context of athletics in Kenya. Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks.
Thank you.
Now look at part 3. For part 3, you will need the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Please find and prepare it. Part 3. You will hear a radio programme in which experts explain how to build your self-esteem and how to increase your self-confidence. You will hear 6 pieces of advice about how to reach it. Below, you can read the information, 14 to 20, which is in the wrong order. Indicate the order in which you hear the information by writing a number 1 to 6 next to the letter that indicates the information. Be careful. There is one extra summary. Put X next to the letter indicating the extra information. Write your answers on the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Now you have 2 minutes to read the tasks. Now listen to part 3.
You will hear a radio program in which experts explain how to build your self-esteem. It may sound a bit strange, but feeling good about who you are, that is, having a healthy amount of self-esteem and self-confidence, is one of those things that will help make your life happier and more successful. Now you will hear 6 tips to help you feel more confident and in control of your life as a teen.
Tip number 1. Staying relaxed and being laid back in general can help you see the bigger picture and not sweat the small and unimportant things so much. It's also a good frame of mind to be in when you're taking a close look at the things you're not so good at. Staying calm will help you when you're facing a tough decision or standing up against peer pressure. Tip number 2. Everybody's good at something, and many people are good at quite a few things. Even if you don't have a talent or strength that you're aware of, you probably have some interests you can develop into strengths. Make a list of a few things you're good at and a few things you're interested in and would like to be better at. Share this list with your parents, an aunt or uncle, or a teacher you like and trust. They can probably help you find other things you're good at and help you come up with a plan for developing other skills and interests. Tip number 3. Nobody's perfect, not even close. It may not always seem this way, but it's true. So if you weren't born a good singer, a super athlete, or an A student, that's okay. You have a personality and a perspective on the world that's all your own and completely valuable, even if you're poor at basketball, have a big nose, or think you look terrible in a skirt or suit. Tip number 4. One of the biggest things that keeps people from achieving their goals and feeling good about themselves is negative self-talk. In other words, telling yourself that you're a loser or a failure makes your ability to get what you want much weaker. If you don't do well at a particular project or task, it doesn't mean that you never will. Perhaps you weren't prepared, or the time simply wasn't right. It doesn't mean that you're less valuable or that you will never succeed. Tip number 5. Did you pass your driver's test or give an excellent speech despite feeling nervous? Give yourself credit when and where it is deserved. You did it and you rule. And guess what? You can tackle bigger, harder projects. So why not praise yourself for this small but important success? Congratulate yourself on every small achievement. Tip number 6. Find a few small things that you did well each day. They can even be part of your daily routine. Whether it's waking up on time or sending a card to your grandmother, a lot of good can be accomplished in one day. Think about what you've done during the day and recognize its value.
Now listen again.
You will hear a radio program in which experts explain how to build your self-esteem. It may sound a bit strange, but feeling good about who you are, that is, having a healthy amount of self-esteem and self-confidence, is one of those things that will help make your life happier and more successful. Now you will hear 6 tips to help you feel more confident and in control of your life as a teen.
Tip number 1. Staying relaxed and being laid back in general can help you see the bigger picture and not sweat the small and unimportant things so much. It's also a good frame of mind to be in when you're taking a close look at the things you're not so good at. Staying calm will help you when you're facing a tough decision or standing up against peer pressure. Tip number 2. Everybody's good at something, and many people are good at quite a few things. Even if you don't have a talent or strength that you're aware of, you probably have some interests you can develop into strengths. Make a list of a few things you're good at and a few things you're interested in and would like to be better at. Share this list with your parents, an aunt or uncle, or a teacher you like and trust. They can probably help you find other things you're good at and help you come up with a plan for developing other skills and interests. Tip number 3. Nobody's perfect, not even close. It may not always seem this way, but it's true. So if you weren't born a good singer, a super athlete, or an A student, that's okay. You have a personality and a perspective on the world that's all your own and completely valuable, even if you're poor at basketball, have a big nose, or think you look terrible in a skirt or suit. Tip number 4. One of the biggest things that keeps people from achieving their goals and feeling good about themselves is negative self-talk. In other words, telling yourself that you're a loser or a failure makes your ability to get what you want much weaker. If you don't do well at a particular project or task, it doesn't mean that you never will. Perhaps you weren't prepared, or the time simply wasn't right. It doesn't mean that you're less valuable or that you will never succeed. Tip number 5. Did you pass your driver's test or give an excellent speech despite feeling nervous? Give yourself credit when and where it is deserved. You did it and you rule. And guess what? You can tackle bigger, harder projects. So why not praise yourself for this small but important success? Congratulate yourself on every small achievement. Tip number 6. Find a few small things that you did well each day. They can even be part of your daily routine. Whether it's waking up on time or sending a card to your grandmother, a lot of good can be accomplished in one day. Think about what you've done during the day and recognize its value.
Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks. The listening section is now over. Please stop working on this section. Now go on to the next sections of the test.